This is the Pearson EdXL International GCSE English as a Second Language Paper 2 Listening Test, November 2024. This test is in four parts, and you will have to answer questions on what you hear. At the end of each extract, there will be a pause to give you time to read the questions. You will hear all four parts twice. Write your answers in the spaces in your question booklet as you listen. Part 1. Section A. In this section, you will hear five short extracts in which people are talking about their favourite type of holiday. Read the list of holidays below, then listen to the extracts. For questions 1 to 5, identify which holiday, A to H, is being described by each speaker by marking a cross for the correct answer. If you change your mind about an answer, put a line through the box and then mark your new answer with a cross. Not all types of holiday are described, and each may be used more than once. One mark will be awarded for each correct answer. You have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions. Speaker 1.
There are times when I need to give myself space and time to relax and feel better. I think that a short break on a beach or a long walk in the countryside is not enough. I need a holiday where I can refresh myself in both body and mind. A week of therapies and treatments in a beautiful place works like magic.
Speaker 2.
I like the kind of holidays that help me protect and respect places, wildlife, and the people of the destinations I visit. These holidays can involve visiting fragile environments and relatively undisturbed habitats. They can also benefit local people and preserve the natural world. Holidays like this are designed to be low-impact and small-scale alternatives to commercial mass tourism.
Speaker 3.
For me, this type of holiday is one of the most exciting and rewarding experiences I can possibly have in the natural world. Nothing can beat being in the wilderness and knowing that you are sharing the space with wild animals. Seeing lion cubs with their mother is a thrilling, never-to-be-forgotten sight.
Speaker 4. As a parent, I feel that this is a very important holiday for me. Days spent with the children, whether toddlers or teenagers, are about giving time to recharge and enjoy each other's company. The holiday creates memories we can treasure for many years to come. A mix of activities, beaches and forest walks, appeal to all of us. Speaker 5.
I can get to my destination by plane, train, or even coach. There are fabulous cities just a short journey away from us, full of history, culture, and sightseeing. I can choose museums and art galleries or even shopping malls. This suits my lifestyle, and I can take this type of break several times throughout the year.
Now listen a second time and check your answers. Speaker 1.
There are times when I need to give myself space and time to relax and feel better. I think that a short break on a beach or a long walk in the countryside is not enough. I need a holiday where I can refresh myself in both body and mind. A week of therapies and treatments in a beautiful place works like magic.
Speaker 2.
I like the kind of holidays that help me protect and respect places, wildlife, and the people of the destinations I visit. These holidays can involve visiting fragile environments and relatively undisturbed habitats. They can also benefit local people and preserve the natural world. Holidays like this are designed to be low-impact and small-scale alternatives to commercial mass tourism.
Speaker 3.
For me, this type of holiday is one of the most exciting and rewarding experiences I can possibly have in the natural world. Nothing can beat being in the wilderness and knowing that you are sharing the space with wild animals. Seeing lion cubs with their mother is a thrilling, never-to-be-forgotten sight.
Speaker 4. As a parent, I feel that this is a very important holiday for me. Days spent with the children, whether toddlers or teenagers, are about giving time to recharge and enjoy each other's company. The holiday creates memories we can treasure for many years to come. A mix of activities, beaches and forest walks, appeal to all of us. Speaker 5.
I can get to my destination by plane, train, or even coach. There are fabulous cities just a short journey away from us, full of history, culture, and sightseeing. I can choose museums and art galleries or even shopping malls. This suits my lifestyle, and I can take this type of break several times throughout the year.
That's the end of Part 1, Section A. Now turn to Part 1, Section B. Section B. In this section, you will hear a person describing a holiday on the Mississippi River in America. For questions 6 to 10, listen and answer the questions below. Write no more than 3 words for each answer. 1 mark will be awarded for each correct answer. You have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
The southern states of America are amazing destinations to visit. The river cruise we went on was an ideal way of visiting cities with elegant buildings, fascinating museums, important historical sites, and trying some delicious food and drink. We spent 7 days in a floating hotel. The American Queen is one of the largest paddle-wheel steamboats ever built. It is a true replica of the paddle boats that used to sail up the Mississippi over 150 years ago. On board the boat, we had everything we could wish for. Excellent food, a very luxurious and comfortable cabin, and a well-equipped library, called the Mark Twain Gallery, in honour of the writer who is linked to the Mississippi. It was the perfect way to sail up the mighty river from New Orleans to Memphis, the legendary capital of popular music. On board, we enjoyed shows and talks about life on the river. There was a programme of excursions, which ensured that we, as guests, got the most out of our trip. Our holiday began in New Orleans. The city is a fascinating cultural mix of French, African, and modern American influences, and is famous for its unique Creole and Cajun cuisine. As an introduction to the cruise, we were treated to an evening of live jazz music. We visited some of the oldest settlements along the river, exploring timeless high streets and experiencing Southern hospitality. In the 200-year-old town of St. Francisville, we strolled down the bustling Royal Street and went to the busy market full of local artisans and craftspeople. Our excursions included museums and historical mansions, where I learned a lot about life along the Mississippi and about famous Civil War locations. As we sailed up the Mississippi, we travelled through some of the most beautiful and idyllic countryside in the United States. There were woodlands and gentle rolling hills that seemed to go on forever. The cruise was a wonderful way to get to know the region's agriculture, music, and history.
Now listen a second time and check your answers.
The southern states of America are amazing destinations to visit. The river cruise we went on was an ideal way of visiting cities with elegant buildings, fascinating museums, important historical sites, and trying some delicious food and drink. We spent 7 days in a floating hotel. The American Queen is one of the largest paddle wheel steamboats ever built. It is a true replica of the paddle boats that used to sail up the Mississippi over 150 years ago. On board the boat, we had everything we could wish for. Excellent food, a very luxurious and comfortable cabin, and a well-equipped library, called the Mark Twain Gallery, in honour of the writer who is linked to the Mississippi. It was the perfect way to sail up the mighty river from New Orleans to Memphis, the legendary capital of popular music. On board, we enjoyed shows and talks about life on the river. There was a programme of excursions, which ensured that we, as guests, got the most out of our trip. Our holiday began in New Orleans. The city is a fascinating cultural mix of French, African, and modern American influences, and is famous for its unique Creole and Cajun cuisine. As an introduction to the cruise, we were treated to an evening of live jazz music. We visited some of the oldest settlements along the river, exploring timeless high streets and experiencing Southern hospitality. In the 200-year-old town of St. Francisville, we strolled down the bustling Royal Street and went to the busy market full of local artisans and craftspeople. Our excursions included museums and historical mansions, where I learned a lot about life along the Mississippi and about famous Civil War locations. As we sailed up the Mississippi, we travelled through some of the most beautiful and idyllic countryside in the United States. There were woodlands and gentle rolling hills that seemed to go on forever. The cruise was a wonderful way to get to know the region's agriculture, music, and history.
That's the end of part one. Now turn to part two. Part two. In this part, you will hear a talk about reducing the use of plastic in the home. For questions 11 to 18, listen and complete the notes. Write no more than 3 words for each answer. Questions 19 and 20 must be answered with a cross in a box. If you change your mind about an answer, put a line through the box and then mark your new answer with a cross. 1 mark will be awarded for each correct answer. You have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
Hi, it's Becky Blair here with our weekly broadcast, Lifestyle. Did you know that as well as cutting pollution, if we cut down on the use of plastics, it makes our homes calmer? Until a few years ago, eco products had no appeal to most consumers. This has changed as stylish, well-designed and functional environmentally friendly goods have been introduced. Now, eco products are no longer dull and boring. Having less plastic in our lives is theoretically easier and more desirable than ever before. So, why haven't most of us been successful in cutting down on plastic? The biggest barrier to people living without plastic is how common it is and how long it has been in use as the wonder material of the world. I do not have an issue with the material itself, but the fact that plastic products are often designed to be used once and then thrown away. Nearly all the plastic ever created still exists in some form today, which makes me look at the shampoo bottle on my bathroom shelf very differently. I've now started making small changes. I haven't thrown away every single plastic item that I can spot in my home, but I've introduced plastic-free alternatives as these items wear out. Wherever possible, I try to buy less and better. I started to change parts of the home I didn't like because they looked cluttered. Cupboards are now tidy with rows of airtight glass containers, which will keep rice, pasta, and spices fresh for over 6 months. The colours, textures, and forms of natural materials connect us directly to nature, soothing our senses rather than overloading them. One Japanese research study showed that compared to wood or stone, touching materials like plastic resulted in slightly higher blood pressure and a slightly quicker pulse rate. So by using natural materials, we feel less stressed as they are not only good for the planet, but for us too. So, where can you start making changes? Estimate how much waste you are generating in your home and in which areas. Then, think carefully about what changes you can make. Try your local zero waste shop and refill any containers that you have brought with you, or you can buy containers there to reuse each time you go shopping. There are some great alternatives to cling film, which is difficult to recycle. You can make your own reusable covers for jars by cutting old tea towels into correct-sized circles and adding elastic to hold them in place. When shopping, replace wasteful plastic carrier bags with fabric ones, which you can use again and again. Perhaps the most challenging place of all for reducing our use of plastic at home is in the bathroom. However, noticeable changes can be made there. Try using a solid bar of soap, or if you still want to use a liquid hand wash or shower gel, go for refill alternatives. That way, you will reduce some of those single-use bottles that clutter your bathroom. Some businesses are already helping consumers to be more ecologically friendly. There are companies that have created reuse and refill systems, soon to be trialled in supermarkets, where shoppers can buy a non-plastic container and refill it time and time again. In addition to trying to limit unnecessary pollution, reducing plastic in your homes can make us feel calmer and make your living spaces feel more relaxing and in tune with nature. If you need a helping hand, there are many apps, some of which are free, websites and books that are an enjoyable way to get started on your zero-waste, plastic-free journey.
Now listen a second time and check your answers.
Hi, it's Becky Blair here with our weekly broadcast, Lifestyle. Did you know that as well as cutting pollution, if we cut down on the use of plastics, it makes our homes calmer? Until a few years ago, eco products had no appeal to most consumers. This has changed as stylish, well-designed and functional environmentally friendly goods have been introduced. Now, eco products are no longer dull and boring. Having less plastic in our lives is theoretically easier and more desirable than ever before. So, why haven't most of us been successful in cutting down on plastic? The biggest barrier to people living without plastic is how common it is and how long it has been in use as the wonder material of the world. I do not have an issue with the material itself, but the fact that plastic products are often designed to be used once and then thrown away. Nearly all the plastic ever created still exists in some form today, which makes me look at the shampoo bottle on my bathroom shelf very differently. I've now started making small changes. I haven't thrown away every single plastic item that I can spot in my home, but I've introduced plastic-free alternatives as these items wear out. Wherever possible, I try to buy less and better. I started to change parts of the home I didn't like because they looked cluttered. Cupboards are now tidy with rows of airtight glass containers, which will keep rice, pasta, and spices fresh for over 6 months. The colours, textures, and forms of natural materials connect us directly to nature, soothing our senses rather than overloading them. One Japanese research study showed that compared to wood or stone, touching materials like plastic resulted in slightly higher blood pressure and a slightly quicker pulse rate. So by using natural materials, we feel less stressed as they are not only good for the planet, but for us too. So, where can you start making changes? Estimate how much waste you are generating in your home and in which areas. Then, think carefully about what changes you can make. Try your local zero waste shop and refill any containers that you have brought with you, or you can buy containers there to reuse each time you go shopping. There are some great alternatives to cling film, which is difficult to recycle. You can make your own reusable covers for jars by cutting old tea towels into correct-sized circles and adding elastic to hold them in place. When shopping, replace wasteful plastic carrier bags with fabric ones, which you can use again and again. Perhaps the most challenging place of all for reducing our use of plastic at home is in the bathroom. However, noticeable changes can be made there. Try using a solid bar of soap, or if you still want to use a liquid hand wash or shower gel, go for refill alternatives. That way, you will reduce some of those single-use bottles that clutter your bathroom. Some businesses are already helping consumers to be more ecologically friendly. There are companies that have created reuse and refill systems, soon to be trialled in supermarkets, where shoppers can buy a non-plastic container and refill it time and time again. In addition to trying to limit unnecessary pollution, reducing plastic in your homes can make us feel calmer and make your living spaces feel more relaxing and in tune with nature. If you need a helping hand, there are many apps, some of which are free, websites and books that are an enjoyable way to get started on your zero-waste, plastic-free journey.
That's the end of part two. Now turn to part three. Part three. In this part, you will hear an interview with a popular historian and television presenter. For questions 21 to 25, listen and answer the questions. You do not need to write in full sentences. Questions 26 to 30 must be answered with a cross in a box. If you change your mind about an answer, put a line through the box and then mark your new answer with a cross. One mark will be awarded for each correct answer. You have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
Hi there, Jack Brown here. Welcome to our programme, The Great Interview. Our guest speaker today is historian and television presenter Lucy Worsley. Those of us who love watching her programmes know that nobody brings the past to life with such humour and style as Lucy does. With her dressing up in historical costumes, she takes her viewers on a journey through time. Her programmes are entertaining and informative. Welcome, Lucy. Can you start by telling the listeners a little about yourself?
Yes, thank you. It's a pleasure to be on your programme. Well, I've been passionate about history since I was a child. Although I do a lot of television work, my main job is chief curator for the historic royal palaces, where I'm in charge of the royal collection of paintings and artefacts.
I've heard that your main office is in one of these famous royal palaces. Is it true that you actually work in the Palace of Hampton Court?
Oh yes, it's true. I've been there for nearly 20 years, and every day is a privilege. It's my dream job. It's such a brilliant place that I never want to leave.
You said that you have a passion for history. It certainly shows in your television programmes and books. What is it about history that you love so much?
I think it's fascinating, and you learn a lot about people's lives. History can provide us with hope for the future, because you realise that things don't have to be the way they are. Things can and do change for the better.
Yes, you're right. History can help us to better understand important events that are happening in the world. But let's get back to you and your career. Thanks to television, you have become a popular household name. How did you get to start working in television?
Well, as my work involves heritage and history, and I work in a museum, there is always someone who should be prepared to go on television and explain what an exhibition, painting, or artefact is about. I was asked to help, and it grew from there.
Ah, I see. Although some people would say that being a television presenter is completely different from working as a museum curator, would you agree with that?
No, I wouldn't. It's basically the same work, because both jobs involve talking to people and trying to make history interesting. I don't mind what I do. I'd do anything just to encourage people to take an interest in the past.
Is that why you started dressing up for your television shows? Your programmes are known for the humour with which you present them, and with the way you seem to enjoy dressing in historical costume, whether it's as a queen or a young servant.
Yes, partly. Also, because the programmes I make are for an education and arts channel, who may tell you that they want an hour-long programme on, say, Queen Victoria, but will provide very little funding, it quickly becomes apparent that there's absolutely no budget for a cast of actors, but there's enough money to provide costumes for one person. However, in my latest series, I'll be looking at historical events that are not very cheerful, so I decided I won't dress up, as I felt that would be disrespectful to the people I'm presenting. That'll be a new challenge for me. I haven't done anything like that before.
But I'm sure that, like everything you have done, it'll prove to be a fascinating and popular programme.
Well, yes, I hope so. I felt I needed to do something different. History is not only about kings and queens, but also about ordinary people who get caught up in great events.
When researching for the programme, I discovered that you don't live in a period property, but in a functional modern apartment. I think our listeners may be surprised that you haven't chosen to live in a historic building.
Yes, I live in a very modern flat with lots of space. I don't have any antiques in it at all. That's because I think that tapestries, oil paintings, and the conservation problems linked to those are for work. I don't like domestic responsibilities. I like to be able to travel a lot. I like to write. And all of that's possible with a modern home.
That brings me nicely to my next question. You've written a wide variety of books, from novels to biographies. How do you choose your subject?
My books tend to be about women whose lives will speak to those alive today. I'm not a historian for other historians. I hope I'm a historian for people who normally don't like history. If I'm writing about someone like Jane Austen, it's because her own life was interesting. She's not just an important writer. Now I'm writing a book about Agatha Christie, who was so brilliant and clever.
When people see you on television dressed up in what many would think of as fancy clothes, they might think you're not really a serious person, just a bit of a show-off. How do you see yourself?
Oh, I think I'm quite serious. I like reading, writing, and being by myself. Perhaps I'm a shy and quiet show-off. Yes, that would sum me up.
That's great. Thank you, Lucy, for an interesting insight into your work. Good luck with both your new book and television programme.
Now listen a second time and check your answers.
Hi there, Jack Brown here. Welcome to our programme, The Great Interview. Our guest speaker today is historian and television presenter Lucy Worsley. Those of us who love watching her programmes know that nobody brings the past to life with such humour and style as Lucy does. With her dressing up in historical costumes, she takes her viewers on a journey through time. Her programmes are entertaining and informative. Welcome, Lucy. Can you start by telling the listeners a little about yourself?
Yes, thank you. It's a pleasure to be on your programme. Well, I've been passionate about history since I was a child. Although I do a lot of television work, my main job is chief curator for the historic royal palaces, where I'm in charge of the royal collection of paintings and artefacts.
I've heard that your main office is in one of these famous royal palaces. Is it true that you actually work in the Palace of Hampton Court?
Oh yes, it's true. I've been there for nearly 20 years, and every day is a privilege. It's my dream job. It's such a brilliant place that I never want to leave.
You said that you have a passion for history. It certainly shows in your television programmes and books. What is it about history that you love so much?
I think it's fascinating, and you learn a lot about people's lives. History can provide us with hope for the future, because you realise that things don't have to be the way they are. Things can and do change for the better.
Yes, you're right. History can help us to better understand important events that are happening in the world. But let's get back to you and your career. Thanks to television, you have become a popular household name. How did you get to start working in television?
Well, as my work involves heritage and history, and I work in a museum, there is always someone who should be prepared to go on television and explain what an exhibition, painting, or artefact is about. I was asked to help, and it grew from there.
Ah, I see. Although some people would say that being a television presenter is completely different from working as a museum curator, would you agree with that?
No, I wouldn't. It's basically the same work, because both jobs involve talking to people and trying to make history interesting. I don't mind what I do. I'd do anything just to encourage people to take an interest in the past.
Is that why you started dressing up for your television shows? Your programmes are known for the humour with which you present them, and with the way you seem to enjoy dressing in historical costume, whether it's as a queen or a young servant.
Yes, partly. Also, because the programmes I make are for an education and arts channel, who may tell you that they want an hour-long programme on, say, Queen Victoria, but will provide very little funding, it quickly becomes apparent that there's absolutely no budget for a cast of actors, but there's enough money to provide costumes for one person. However, in my latest series, I'll be looking at historical events that are not very cheerful, so I decided I won't dress up, as I felt that would be disrespectful to the people I'm presenting. That'll be a new challenge for me. I haven't done anything like that before.
But I'm sure that, like everything you have done, it'll prove to be a fascinating and popular programme.
Well, yes, I hope so. I felt I needed to do something different. History is not only about kings and queens, but also about ordinary people who get caught up in great events.
When researching for the programme, I discovered that you don't live in a period property, but in a functional modern apartment. I think our listeners may be surprised that you haven't chosen to live in a historic building.
Yes, I live in a very modern flat with lots of space. I don't have any antiques in it at all. That's because I think that tapestries, oil paintings, and the conservation problems linked to those are for work. I don't like domestic responsibilities. I like to be able to travel a lot. I like to write. And all of that's possible with a modern home.
That brings me nicely to my next question. You've written a wide variety of books, from novels to biographies. How do you choose your subject?
My books tend to be about women whose lives will speak to those alive today. I'm not a historian for other historians. I hope I'm a historian for people who normally don't like history. If I'm writing about someone like Jane Austen, it's because her own life was interesting. She's not just an important writer. Now I'm writing a book about Agatha Christie, who was so brilliant and clever.
When people see you on television dressed up in what many would think of as fancy clothes, they might think you're not really a serious person, just a bit of a show-off. How do you see yourself?
Oh, I think I'm quite serious. I like reading, writing, and being by myself. Perhaps I'm a shy and quiet show-off. Yes, that would sum me up.
That's great. Thank you, Lucy, for an interesting insight into your work. Good luck with both your new book and television programme.
That's the end of part three. Now turn to part four. Part four. In this part, you will hear a podcast about what our lives might look like in the future. For questions 31 to 33 and 38 to 40, listen and complete the sentences below. Write no more than three words for each answer. For questions 34 to 37, complete the table. Write no more than three words for each answer. One mark will be awarded for each correct answer. You have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
Groundbreaking technological inventions, which we now take for granted, started revolutionising our homes about a century ago. From television and radio to refrigerators and vacuum cleaners, advances were made in technology, science and entertainment that helped to make the lives of millions of people easier. Despite some unrealistic predictions over the last 50 years, we're not, for example, driving around in cars that take off, fly like rockets, or dive underwater like mini submarines. Instead, we have benefited from the development of information technology such as the internet and Wi-Fi. This has led to such inventions as the smartphone, which has revolutionized the way we communicate with each other. So, with this amazing technology at our fingertips, what sort of inventions that will change our lives can we expect in the future? For example, ways of getting to our destinations could be very different from what we're used to. Feeling guilty about our carbon footprints could disappear as our means of transport are changed. Flying has long been seen as having one of the biggest carbon footprints because of high emissions associated with aviation fuel. Long-haul flights are out of favor, and space tourism is considered bad for the environment. However, an emerging option for long-distance travel that would not be a threat to the environment is the Hyperloop system, currently being trialed by countries such as Canada and Spain. This could see passengers traveling at great speeds in driverless pod-like carriages that race silently through giant tubes installed above or below ground. For shorter journeys, scientists are getting very excited about the prospect of electric self-driving vehicles. To put it simply, we are unlikely to own cars in the future, and younger generations may not even have to learn to drive. Nor will there be a need for driving licenses. If you want to get somewhere, you could hire a self-driving electric car and program it to get you there. It would be a bit like hiring a taxi, but without the driver. The most sophisticated technology, which would make driverless cars a reality, is already here and being tested in the United States. Of course, there are concerns about the safety of driverless vehicles, but scientists are confident that technology will have developed to the point where moving vehicles will be able to communicate with each other and so avoid accidents. Thanks to advanced technology, drivers will be able to share road space with self-driving vehicles, which would be difficult now. The logic of owning a car when you only spend a couple of hours in it each day will change. We can expect ever smaller gadgets as technology becomes even more sophisticated. Smart watches and wearable exercise trackers will offer medical-grade health checks to monitor heart and brain activity. Possible health problems could be highlighted and the wearer informed before they actually happen. At the moment, we feel lost without our smartphones, but in the future, we may not have to carry them around. Instead, the email you need to check could be visible on your wrist. Technology is being developed to beam high-resolution screens onto human skin. So, you'd be able to use your hand or wrist as a temporary screen. While there may be concerns about the use or misuse of personal data that need to be overcome, smart technology will have the possibility to improve people's health. Many of our homes now have a smart speaker. However, a new generation is being developed that will respond not only to a voice, but to gestures like the blink of an eye or the twist of the mouth to turn music on and off. The latest version has all the technology on a headband, but it's likely that the controls will become even smaller than that. Smart homes are the future, and they are going to be shaping our lives in ever more interesting ways. For example, we've long been fascinated with creating robots to carry out boring household chores, but so far, technology has been limited to vacuum cleaners and lawnmowers. Recently, however, a small home robot has been launched that moves around the house using cameras and a screen to check on your loved ones or pets when you're not at home. A leading electronic company has recently patented designs for robots that can go up and down stairs and interact with domestic appliances. Despite these developments, scientists say that more work needs to be done before we end up with a single robot capable of doing all domestic jobs. One leading scientist feels that while it would be useful to have a robot doing the ironing, it would be extremely difficult to create one which would be smart and clever enough to do that kind of job. Although we may not think so, ironing is quite a complicated task, involving many different and coordinated movements. The challenge of getting a robot to do more than one job, say dusting and ironing, becomes huge. The way things look at the moment, we would need a large number of robots in the house to perform all our household chores. That's because the broad layout and design of our homes hasn't changed for decades. We've brought technology into our homes, but the physical environment remains basically the same, and therefore is challenging. A typical contemporary home has stairs, doors, tight spaces, and uneven surfaces. So in reality, it would be difficult, even impossible, for the next few decades to construct a robot that is capable of performing many different household tasks.
Now listen a second time and check your answers.
Groundbreaking technological inventions, which we now take for granted, started revolutionizing our homes about a century ago. From television and radio to refrigerators and vacuum cleaners, advances were made in technology, science, and entertainment that helped to make the lives of millions of people easier. Despite some unrealistic predictions over the last 50 years, we're not, for example, driving around in cars that take off, fly like rockets, or dive underwater like mini submarines. Instead, we have benefited from the development of information technology such as the internet and Wi-Fi. This has led to such inventions as the smartphone, which has revolutionized the way we communicate with each other. So, with this amazing technology at our fingertips, what sort of inventions that will change our lives can we expect in the future? For example, ways of getting to our destinations could be very different from what we're used to. Feeling guilty about our carbon footprints could disappear as our means of transport are changed. Flying has long been seen as having one of the biggest carbon footprints because of high emissions associated with aviation fuel. Long-haul flights are out of favor, and space tourism is considered bad for the environment. However, an emerging option for long-distance travel that would not be a threat to the environment is the Hyperloop system, currently being trialled by countries such as Canada and Spain. This could see passengers travelling at great speeds in driverless pod-like carriages that race silently through giant tubes installed above or below ground. For shorter journeys, scientists are getting very excited about the prospect of electric self-driving vehicles. To put it simply, we are unlikely to own cars in the future, and younger generations may not even have to learn to drive. Nor will there be a need for driving licenses. If you want to get somewhere, you could hire a self-driving electric car and program it to get you there. It would be a bit like hiring a taxi, but without the driver. The most sophisticated technology, which would make driverless cars a reality, is already here and being tested in the United States. Of course, there are concerns about the safety of driverless vehicles, but scientists are confident that technology will have developed to the point where moving vehicles will be able to communicate with each other and so avoid accidents. Thanks to advanced technology, drivers will be able to share road space with self-driving vehicles, which would be difficult now. The logic of owning a car when you only spend a couple of hours in it each day will change. We can expect ever smaller gadgets as technology becomes even more sophisticated. Smart watches and wearable exercise trackers will offer medical-grade health checks to monitor heart and brain activity. Possible health problems could be highlighted and the wearer informed before they actually happen. At the moment, we feel lost without our smartphones, but in the future, we may not have to carry them around. Instead, the email you need to check could be visible on your wrist. Technology is being developed to beam high-resolution screens onto human skin. So, you'd be able to use your hand or wrist as a temporary screen. While there may be concerns about the use or misuse of personal data that need to be overcome, smart technology will have the possibility to improve people's health. Many of our homes now have a smart speaker. However, a new generation is being developed that will respond not only to a voice, but to gestures like the blink of an eye or the twist of the mouth to turn music on and off. The latest version has all the technology on a headband, but it's likely that the controls will become even smaller than that. Smart homes are the future, and they are going to be shaping our lives in ever more interesting ways. For example, we've long been fascinated with creating robots to carry out boring household chores, but so far, technology has been limited to vacuum cleaners and lawnmowers. Recently, however, a small home robot has been launched that moves around the house using cameras and a screen to check on your loved ones or pets when you're not at home. A leading electronic company has recently patented designs for robots that can go up and down stairs and interact with domestic appliances. Despite these developments, scientists say that more work needs to be done before we end up with a single robot capable of doing all domestic jobs. One leading scientist feels that while it would be useful to have a robot doing the ironing, it would be extremely difficult to create one which would be smart and clever enough to do that kind of job. Although we may not think so, ironing is quite a complicated task, involving many different and coordinated movements. The challenge of getting a robot to do more than one job, say dusting and ironing, becomes huge. The way things look at the moment, we would need a large number of robots in the house to perform all our household chores. That's because the broad layout and design of our homes hasn't changed for decades. We've brought technology into our homes, but the physical environment remains basically the same, and therefore is challenging. A typical contemporary home has stairs, doors, tight spaces, and uneven surfaces. So in reality, it would be difficult, even impossible, for the next few decades to construct a robot that is capable of performing many different household tasks.
That is the end of the test. Please wait for your question booklet to be collected. Thank you and good luck.